welcome to the War Master Podcast, episode 26 with Paul and Barry.
Hello, how are you doing, lovely viewers?
Listeners.
Oh, I don't know.
They're not viewing much. So what are we doing today, Paul?
This is episode 26, the Battle of the Little Big Bash.
Little Big Bash. Out of the rule book.
Yes, so what we decided to do is that we played one of the scenarios out of the War Master rulebook, original. This one is the first one. It's called The Battle of the Little Big Bash. It's on page 80, for those of you who have the War Master rulebook. It's a one-page setting. We looked at it, played it, and we'll chat about it afterwards.
So we'll talk about how we did it, why we did it, and all that kind of gubbins. It's the 21st of July,
and it's just coming up to 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday.
So that's about 6 days after the last one. I think going forward we might try and have a weekly release date. So rather than releasing on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays.
Podcast. But if that's what Barry will be doing the stuff. So if that's what he wants to do, no problem.
I think it makes sense.
Yes, indeed.
Right. So what have you been doing, Paul, in this fine week of wargaming?
Well, it's a very warm week, isn't it? It just kind of sap your creativity. Oh. Like I find the hot weather. It just makes you lazy.
I just sit around in pants all day. I think that's what everybody does, if they're being honest.
To anybody who doesn't know, Britain's having a little bit of a heatwave right now. It got, to 32 degrees.
32? God, how do they cope?
Country. So around 30, it's been a cold day for some countries. So around here it's been 30, and just British people just don't function at that kind of temperature, I'm afraid.
It's not just the people, it's the roads start melting, the railway lines start warping.
The leaves start coming off the line and replaced by warm tracks, and trains can't run on warm tracks, obviously.
So a friend of my wife found out that the reason because the trains don't run is because they're not laid on concrete, they're laid on bits of stone and wood and stuff, they're actual rails.
That was forward thinking,
when we did that. Put them on concrete, so we don't want any of that.
We don't want any of that.
This cheap shit that we can't use whenever it's hot, cold, windy, rainy, snowy. So, as usual, Britain's falling apart because we've got a bit of adverse weather, most countries.
It's all good. I mean, I busted out a Hawaiian shirt today because it's probably summer, so, you've got to take the advantages. But it's the sleeping. But basically, England is a cold country, and there's very few days that you would warrant actually having air conditioning, but it's been definitely I could have done with air conditioning in where I sleep over the past couple of days because it's just been so humid to sleep. It's not nice. Might just check into a hotel for a few days with air conditioning.
Well, that's why people in different climates they go to bed at 12 o'clock at night. They eat dinner at 10 o'clock because there's no point trying to eat and go to sleep when it's this hot.
No, I agree, and that's probably a good idea. But it's just because the heat rises, and so it's warmer. The warmest place in the house is upstairs in the bedroom, and it's horrible. Never mind.
So talk about good stuff. What have you been doing?
So since we last recorded, I have had a couple of games of our never-ending Survivor Series Blood Bowl League. Finishing that off.
So, do you enjoy that?
Well, enjoyment is such a strong word. but I'm doing it because I promised Darren, the organizer, that I would. And I put my name as a ringer in the Championship and the Premiership League. So I've qualified with my Orc team in the Premiership League for the playoffs. And my Goblin team for the Ringer League has just been destroyed over the past couple of games. So it doesn't really matter. So I've done what I said I'd do, and now I'll just wait for the other people to finish their games, and we'll play the playoffs. And I'll be with you. I mean, the thing is the idea of having the two leagues was to have all the good players in one league and the newer players in the bottom. If the good players are willing to be ringers in the bottom league with bad teams, a nice idea. But ultimately, the players in the bottom league, like the Championship, will qualify and play the good players with their teams from the Premiership, and they're just going to get destroyed.
If they played, because you're all using stunty teams.
The ringers.
Were all dwarves, they'd be pretty good dwarves by now, thousands of goblins after game.
But, steel start sharp and steel. It's when they're with their plucky teams that they've qualified in the Championship, when they play the proper teams, like my no-nonsense orc team.
Mighty Blow.
Mighty Blow orc team. It'll be I don't know, I don't think they've learnt enough to be competitive. If you follow, because we'll see. But our club's tried Blood Bowl leagues for a long time, and it's tried every tryout before out of the Blood Bowl league.
You're due to start on the next one then. About
oh my god! No, I don't think that's happening. I think everyone just needs a break. And there's a Guild Ball league running at the moment, and it's tried. I don't think the league rules for that are really working, because you're supposed to get their versions like favours, their versions of inducements, etc. But nobody's done them. It's like they've been had them. It doesn't seem to be a big deal. It's like in Guild Ball, your players can't progress. They can't learn new stuff.
Oh, right.
So they sort of can in the league. It doesn't really work. As in, like from the outside looking in, because I didn't commit to the Guild Ball league because I couldn't. They were going to try a very regular. Like playing of it, and I couldn't commit regularly enough with the shifts, which is a shame because I probably would have learned Guild Ball better. But it doesn't seem to. Again, that doesn't seem to work.
The tournament systems generally are easier than league systems. League systems are phenomenally difficult to balance.
Yeah, exactly. If you have set dates, people can't make them and thus can't contribute. I mean, this reason I call this Blood Bowl League the Survivor Series is because half the players have dropped out of it. So. It is pretty probably is like wrestling Survivor Series. Can you make it to the end? Anyway, played those games. I also played Nav on. I played a couple of games of War Machine. I played Nav on Tuesday because basically I had to busman's holiday. I worked all weekend and then had to take my wife to A&E on Monday because her legs kind of locked out. And so I was like, I'm going back. I went back to work on my day off.
Superb.
Wasn't good. Anyway, so
preferential treatment.
I could have done that afterwards. Like the receptionists were like, "Oh, you should have done this, and we'd have bumped you up the queue," that kind of thing. But it wasn't emergency. That wouldn't have been the correct thing to do. So
and it wasn't your knee.
No, it wasn't my knee. Yeah, but like, it's not fair. Yeah. On Tuesday I played Nav at War Machine, and yeah, I mean he's still. Like, I had to explain, show him what Mark III was. It was like, he needs to, like, properly embrace Mark III, which he will do, but until he does, it's not worth playing him, in a sense, because it's like, this is the game's now Mark III, Nav. It's like, playing a Mark II list against a Mark III list doesn't work.
Right.
Yeah. So, anyway, in time, he might pick that up. Hopefully, next time we'll play War Master instead. And, I was supposed to play Nick at Warmaster down the club last night. Sadly, he got too busy at work and had said he couldn't. So I got a pickup game of War Machine against Mark Pocock, which was really good, actually, because Mark's a good player. He's learnt a lot about War Machine recently for a relatively new player.
Yeah.
And he's using this really interesting Pirates list, which I was good for me in a number of ways, because this current list pairing I've got of War Machine, of using Sloane and Darius, depending on the scenario. So it was a killbox one. Great, that's what I rolled up. I wanted to try Darius more, put him into that. And my armor skew was too much for him. Once I got my jacks to hold the flag, to hold the areas they need to be, he was going to run out of time before he could get through my jacks.
Yeah.
You know, which was good. Because once I... Basically, his pirate list... It was pretty strong, actually, because it had pirates toughing on a 4-up with no knockdown, in an area, bubbles of protection. That's pretty damn... I mean, you'll waste a lot of damage trying to shoot hit them down. Like, it would run straight over my Sloane list. But he had two armor buffs, the damage buffs in the list, Yara and Holt and Ragman. And once they died, I got them by trampling. That was it. Even if he got behind my jacks to ignore their shield, he can't get through the armor.
Yeah.
You know, and equally, he had Wrong Eye and Snapjaw, and I thought, he'll throw one of my jacks away, and it's like he doesn't actually have open fists. So it's like, that isn't.
It was a weird list Mark was using, I'll be honest. It was like it was the third type of list, which I think is the list that struggles the most in the current meta. So it wasn't the armour, it wasn't the gun line, it was the inventory spam.
Yeah.
And
it was a very good one.
Yeah.
It's in a good, well-built list, definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought. I mean,
it would have done well against gun line.
Oh, yeah, God, yeah. I mean, four up toughing, no knockdown, is... That's massively spikes against... That's massively...
They've always had that.
Well, as I say, but like, that is a really good list for
them. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was Shay. He was using Captain Shay.
Captain Shay.
Mm-hmm.
Phineas Shay. Okay, so you done?
Yeah, that's everything I've done. So, as I say, like, I wanted to play two War Master games and ended up playing War Machine instead, sadly. I'd rather have played War Master.
Okay.
But never mind. I mean, I won't be able to get down the club now for another month because I'm working every Wednesday. I mean, I might turn up socially, but I'm working every Wednesday. And my next game, organised, is on the 17th of August, and that is a game of NetEpic. Against Rid. And there was a game of NetEpic being played. That's quite funny. A game of NetEpic being played down the club last night. Anthony played Dave.
God,
and he only went two turns.
I'm surprised they bothered. they were arguing so much before the game. It took an hour, way more than an hour, for them to even set up. Because they were arguing about lists, this and that. God, man.
I mean, it's
painful.
The thing is, I'd happily play either of them because I take NetEpic in the way you're meant to take it. But they seem to be like far too rules lawyering, far too much.
Serious, man. It was like, God,
far too serious for a game like NetEpic. And like a Dave's Tau list just shot the orcs off the table. Like
even Anthony's mad. You got to shoot everything off the table.
Shot all of. I mean, I didn't watch the game, but it had ended in two turns, and I don't know. I'd have to, because there's definitely things I can you could do in NetEpic about it, but I don't know. But anyway,
the angels turn one charge. But that was one of the things of 40k that I just couldn't stand. I couldn't stand like baseline gun armies. It just drove me mad. It was just like, God, this game's shit.
Well, you say I'm using a baseline gun army in War Machine, the scenario you beat it by scenarios.
I know.
But
of them there isn't an answer to in other systems.
Well, that's the thing.
But you're playing orcs. You've got to foot slog your way across, well, getting annihilated.
Like, you should have some vehicles. But like,
oh, they're good. No armor.
But I know. I mean, like, that NetEpic is a place of my heart because you look at it and it looks so much nicer than current 40k. Than 28 mil scale 40k. It looks like I lent them some buildings and the table looked great and they could have put more buildings onto it and it just looked fantastic. And Anthony's painted his orcs really well. They look great. Dave's tower still all just metal, sadly, but they would look good if he'd paint them. The game looks lovely. Like, picturesque. I've spoken before about this left, middle, right of arcs of games, and NetEpic's far right is in all fun, no competitiveness.
Yeah.
I won't ever be competitive in NetEpic. I'll always take lists that I think look kind of right, in a sense. Like, I won't min-max stuff like poor Anthony might, But it's good. I mean, I'll look forward to this game against Rid on the 17th. He'll use Dark Elder. I'll try to use something that, I don't know, I'll see. But the Dark Elder was so quick last time I played them that it was like, oh my God, I might bring out a Titan to try and hold something.
Cool. Right, I haven't done much this week. I did a bit of, played an Eternal Masters draft on Monday. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who know Magic, that's pretty cool. Somebody, Nick, actually, the guy who runs Extreme Trades in Colchester, brought down some boosters because he just wanted to practice. So he gave everybody some boosters to practice with, and then he kept all the cards. So
that's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, it's an expensive set. It's like a couple of £100 for 24 boosters.
Bloody hell.
So it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I did all right for change with the blue-white flyers.
So everything's powerful, like in those cards? Why are they so expensive?
Because some of the cards are really expensive.
You're right, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, I got a nothing card, but it was the first time it'd ever been printed in foil.
Ah, right, okay.
And it's called Toxic Deluge, and that was worth
$80. Oh, bloody, for a card. Wizards of the Coast, the guys who make Magic, have got such a good winning idea format, hasn't it?
You just
got
to milk it slowly.
Oh, yeah.
Just milk it slowly.
This card cost us 20 pence to make. And,
way less than 20 pence.
Yeah.
Way less than 20 pence.
And then, markup's amazing.
And then I was supposed to play Rodders, where he had a 15 break piece
of
list.
Yeah, I'd love to have seen that. Yeah.
Wow. With no woods.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure he's going to bring
it. What did he say? Trains, like family. Like,
yeah, it was the thing I was talking about with the train lines are melting.
Oh, I see.
So
right.
So all the train lines were screwed because they were all melting.
Yeah.
So he couldn't turn up.
But it's a shame we didn't get to play you, Rodders, me, Nick, but at least both of them sold us beforehand. So I
got a game of War Machine. I played my Legion shooty list because I still want to see how shooting works. Mm-hmm. It works, how shooting works.
Yeah.
It's actually better than it was, which is annoying.
against, what was that, Neil Cooper?
Yeah, so Neil Cooper brought
the
men off this.
NATO.
Angriest man in Britain. And he had his guys shield walled in with defenders ward and armor. So basically, they were armor and concealment. So they were armor 17, no, def 17, armor 19 against shooting.
Pretty good.
Yeah. So it's, what are they? A flame guard. Yeah. With all the buffs and everything, and I still shot them all off.
No. But he won that, didn't he?
Yeah, but that was because I wasn't playing particularly cautiously.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. You were just like playing for. Like, see what your stuff could do. Who are you using?
I was using, like, P. Lilith shooting.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if I'd have played sensibly, I'd have won the game easily. Because I had four transfers, and I just decided to chuck three of them away.
Fair enough, yeah.
Just to
for lols.
Yeah, and I also had one of my things could give me a cloud effect, and I've got prowl, so I'd have stealth, and then he couldn't shoot me, but I didn't bother putting it up.
Yeah, fair enough.
Mm-hmm. It's my own fault. But, I'd have won the next turn because he had literally nothing left apart from...
Yeah.
He did a spell assassination using an arc.
That's cool. I mean, I like to play Neil, actually. It's just, my time at the club's so limited, but I would like to play him at some point. He is on a list of people to play. Because my shifts got changed recently, and I was going to miss the next War Machine tournament. War Machine tournament in August. And I was like, that's not fair. Because the shifts change without my say so.
You didn't ask me?
So I went in and made up some other reason why I can't do that shift that day and compromised by doing other shifts. So I was like, there we go.
Yeah, good.
So I'm still going to use those two lists.
Yeah, and I'm not at the club for another couple of weeks due to holidays and stuff. Yeah. So next thing we need to talk about is KR sponsorship.
Yes.
Thank you, KR.
Thank you, KR.
Whoever our new contact at KR is, thank you.
Yes, thank you, mysterious KR man. Yeah, with your top hat and monocle and cane.
and you're twirling
it with your moustache, going out, oh, those podcast boys. Anyway, thank you for that.
Right, and now we're on to the main event. So,
I was
trying to think of what to do that's different, because we always like to do something different. We don't just do army reviews all the time, that sort of thing. We've been talking about scenarios for a while. Scenarios might bring a different way of playing the game that would challenge some of the list building.
It definitely did that.
Challenge some of the list building. Maybe challenge the dominance of cavalry.
Definitely did that.
Yeah. So we played the Battle of the Little Big Bash.
Yes. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 scenarios in the War Master Rulebook. And they are quite general scenarios. They're limit little on detail, but they are scenarios.
Yeah.
So I suppose theoretically we should play all 8 of them at some point.
Well, I'd like to play them with the armies they suggest. So imagine a little bit of time to get them all together.
Yeah, I mean, totally. There is one that doesn't limit any armies. It says just attackers, defenders.
Right.
Yeah, so
this one was Orcs and Empires.
Yeah, so I should give... I mean, basically, our reason to play scenarios is something a bit different. And also, long-term, maybe if we could think up some scenarios that are robust enough that any army could have a crack at, bring them into a competitive play environment, in a sense.
Maybe. Like, it's what makes War Machine so good.
Yeah.
And, yes, it's not... There is no pitch battle in War Machine.
Yeah. Because right now, you design an army, like in our little meta, to play a 2,000-point game to time. That's what your army is.
Yeah, and people are now starting to push the time.
Yeah.
Because there's a bit of a ramping up of breakpoints.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that in order for you to beat them, you've got to do a lot of damage, and that eats a lot of clock.
Yeah. So with scenarios, if we could think up and use some that were robust enough, that might be really interesting, because that would really shake up a meta in the sense of your army list, because suddenly you can't build the orc list that you would take to a tournament. You might have to readjust it because it's got to play in various different scenarios that you know ahead of time. So that's the idea behind it, but we're only going to know that by trying said scenarios, and this is the first one we've tried. So, we need to... Here, I want some fanfare music put in. So I'll pause for, some interesting,
Okay.
Yeah. So, this is the Battle of the Little Big Bash, page 80. I'll read out the fluff.
Fluff, man.
The Big Bash River runs through the area known as the Badlands, marking the territory of warring orc tribes. It has been the scene of many savage battles, and the bones of countless orc warriors litter the riverbed. Upstream runs a tributary called the Little Big Bash. It was to this desolate place that Count Reinhard von Stein, an intrepid but eccentric explorer from the Empire known as Mad Strangler Stern, led his brave warrior adventurers. He was searching for the legendary golden city of Amkabar, supposed to be lying beyond the Badlands. No one knows whether he found it. And after the little battle of the Little Big Bash, he led his army south and vanished forever from history. Yeah. So I guess he won it. So, the battle is fought between the Count's Empire Army and a confederacy of orc tribes under the leadership of Warlock Gruk Big Gruk of the Howling Dog Tribe. However, the battle can easily be fought between any two other armies. The most important feature of the game is a river and a bridge that goes across it. In this game, the defenders, orcs, set up first along the table edge, and the attackers, Empire, set up afterwards but take the first turn. This favours the attackers and compensates for the victory points bonus and scenery, which obliges the attackers to forge across the river in the face of stiff enemy resistance. The Little Big Bash River can be crossed by any troops at the bridge, or infantry can attempt to wade across. The river is neither deep nor dangerous, a unit brigade reaching the river automatically halts, and a further order must be given to move across the river. Troops will not use their initiative to cross the river unless their infantry obliged to charge enemy that they can reach, and in which case they must do so. Infantry units can fight in the river, but stands which retreat into or through the river are automatically destroyed. The boggy ground on either side of the river is passable to infantry only. So victory points bonus, attackers, Empire. Now, these are benefits for 1,000 points. So in a 2,000 point game, I'll read it as it were a 2,000 point game. Yeah. So you would get 200 points if your troops hold the bridge at the end of the game and there are no enemy units on the bridge. Another 200 points for each unit on the enemy side of the river at the end of the game. The orcs will get 1,000 extra points if there are no enemy on their side of the river at the end of the game. And that's it. So the map is basically a winding river that has 1, 2, 3, 4 bends in it. Has one bridge, and that bisects the battlefield complete from left to right.
Yeah,
it's fairly wide with boggy ground on either side. This is a very vague map in this, but meant to be. And it's out of your deployment zone. There's a bridge that crosses it dead centre. There's a hill on the defender's side of the river. There's also two woods which occupy two of the corners.
And they're massive.
And they're
woods
massive.
Are gigantic.
Yeah, they're massive woods. And that's it. That's the scenario.
So we put the scenario, put the table together, matching this as best we could.
Yep.
We rolled for the
See
random
photos.
Amount of turns,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Which turned out to be 8.
Yes, so these scenarios have a set number of turns, which you roll a dice. 1, 2, 6, 3, 4, 7, 5, 6, 8.
So we got 8 turns, and then we rolled for who was going to play what. Because what we decided to do is I was sorting out the table, and Paul sorted out the list.
Yeah, because I had the Empire and the Orc models, I decided I wouldn't do any proxies. I would do actual physical models that I owned. And I would create both army lists, and we would randomly roll for each side, which would then encourage, and I suggest that with scenario play, if you're practicing it, one person does the list, because then there isn't, like, a benefit to one or other. Like, you are...
Because you don't know which
one you're going to use.
Yeah, so you're going to keep it even-ish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there was a little challenge around... only being able to use the models we had.
Yes.
Because if you had unlimited models, maybe some of the lists would have been a slightly different.
The orc list would have been a bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I rolled, I got orcs, I was defending, so I deployed everything.
Yeah.
And as I always want to do, I kind of tried to bring the fight to one portion of the table. Even though I knew Paul was going to try and flood across the table all over the board, but orcs is a pretty crap at leadership roles. And I was worried if I spread my command too thin, I would just get picked apart.
So we'll read out the lists, so just people know that what we're dealing with. So Barry, if you do the orcs.
I will do the orcsies. So we had 4 orc warriors, 1 black orc, 6 goblins, 2 trolls, 1 ogres, 1 boar riders, 2 wolf riders, 1 wolf chariot, 1 giant... 2 rock lobbers, 1 general, 2 heroes, 1 with a wyvern and a 5-point sword, 2 orc shaman, 1 goblin hero, and 2 goblin shaman.
So with hindsight, I'd have given out the orcs more orc warriors if I had them.
Yeah.
Like, it was too much cavalry, because cavalry's very limited in this scenario.
Well, unless you could get
that
bridge.
Unless you can get across the bridge, that's it. Like,
yeah, but then you're really exposed.
Because
if you get pushed back, where are you going?
Yeah.
You can't go into the river, you can't go into the swamps. Or marshland or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much of the table they cannot go in.
Yeah, so it's a real infantry-heavy list. Mm-hmm. Which is good.
For the Empire list, I did 8 halberdiers. One had a banner of steadfastness because they were like Teutonic Guard models. One had.
I don't think that came into any point because it's against shooting, isn't it?
Yeah, doesn't matter. like scenario play, Barry.
Right.
One and also to make up points. Like one was a sword of fate to make them great swords because I had great sword models. 2 were handgunners, 4 crossbowmen, 2 flagellants, 3 skirmisher stands, 1 knights, 1 pistoliers, 2 hellblasters, 2 cannons, a general of the Orb of Majesty. Oh, I completely forgot about that. Yeah, like 3 heroes, 1 griffin, and 2 wizards. Oh, I completely forgot about the Orb of Majesty. Really should have remembered that, but never mind. Like,
you wrote the list.
Yeah, I know. Well, like, you know, I just wrote them. Like, the Empire list was all right for it, you know, kind of fit for purpose. I had what I would want, I think, really. And both armies are breakpoint 11. There's no scouting because it's set who sets up and who goes first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no fanning around with deployment. I deploys,
yeah.
Then you deployed, then you went first.
Yeah, yeah. So, tale of the game, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, so what did you do? What did you do?
Okay, so Barry's setup, like, was... he did not set up how I would set up. Because I can score as soon as I'm across that river, like, at the end of the game. So I'd have gone to try and defend the whole river. And I'd have held... And with the very limited role of cavalry and the fact that orcs don't have great command, I would assume I would not get my orcs past the orders to get them across the bridge. So I might try it because I'm, like, crazy unit. But, like, I would have the orcs cavalry waiting across the bridge to charge it. And the giant would have... That's what the giant would have done. And then I'd have tried to spread out the Ord infantry enough to try and tackle the Empire as they come across the water. That's how I would have played it. Because if you get that 1,000-point bonus, you've won massively. Because that swing is so much in a 2,000-point game that it's like that's a default win.
Well, alternatively, I wasn't really worried about the points, the victory points. I knew we had 8 turns. Yeah. I knew you were going to come across, and I was hopefully going to take enough to break you.
So with my setup, I set up across the table, and I put a infantry unit, not in the wood on my left, but like to go swing down the side of it. Artillery then to cover the bridge approach. My cavalry, which I was going to try and get across the bridge, and then my massive infantry to centre to right, to just to forward across it, to get across it as best I can, and depending on how quickly I can get the orders off. And I did need all those characters, definitely.
Yeah, oh, easy.
Yeah,
easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I needed more characters.
Yeah. Can you believe it? So early turns, like, went really well for me, actually. I managed to even get the infantry brigade on the left, actually even got across the river in the first turn. So I was pushing up quite nicely. And Barry with it, with some jammy blinkering of rock lobbers, trying to shoot my knights only, which I thought, fair enough. Yeah, like,
that is a valid tactic.
You can play scenario, but you can't get the gamer out of the out of it.
If you've got a brigade of 2 rock lobbers and 2 goblins either side, you can shuffle the goblins forward to give them a
I'm
direct
shaking
line
my head
of sight.
Right,
it's
like,
true, man.
Yes, you can. It's just, oh.
I came up with even bigger shenanigans later on.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'll tell you about later.
Shenanigans, sir.
So, we were doing a bit of shooting, pinging off.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were ready to receive him when he came across the waters.
Yeah, exactly. And in later turns, my...
And Geross. Geross.
So, in later turns, my left infantry brigade did get across the river and ended up scrapping with a brigade of trolls and goblins. Which they ended up like losing to, but they had got across the river. But I managed to get across the river in quite force on the right-hand side. So it looking quite good. And I realised that, if obviously with the marsh rules, as in only infantry can get in, well, his cavalry was going to do nothing.
And giant.
Now, I would be fair to say that monsters perhaps should be able to go straight across it because they're monsters. If the infantry can wade across it, surely something that's bigger could walk across it.
It could, yeah. I think giants especially.
Yeah, because... And this is why you would need to play scenarios a few times, because, hang on a sec, that doesn't really fit. I can understand why things with wheels and cavalry can't cross river, I get that, but a bigger thing, when a smaller guy can cross the water, it would be like a stream to him.
It's just a giant humanoid,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah.
Not like a...
He should easily be going across, but... We tried it that he didn't. So
for balance. So he was just stood and he was holding my entire left flank on his own, waiting for him to come across.
So my infantry, like, to come across, they were like, if we stay in this nice sticky mud, that massive giant can't come eat us. It made no sense.
He was waiting there, waiting for a fight. And then Paul caught one of my brigades
Yeah.
Which was quite a good brigade, but he managed to swarm it.
Yeah,
in the middle.
Basically, Barry set it up so my flagellants, who were in, would have to stream across and do some damage, but he would get a break point. Get a point on me. But actually, I managed to get the pistoliers across the bridge and they flank charged. I passed a lot of orders.
And like, you got another brigade in.
Yeah, yeah, you know. I
got
to say, like, the thing I really liked about this. Oh, sorry, we'll leave that to wrap up at the end. But yeah, that so there was a scrap in the middle.
A big one. And he took four of my units.
Yeah, it was good.
In fact, they were the four I lost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was good.
Then. Bang,
yeah.
Gone.
But then basically, the middle to the end of the game was what swung it is my artillery brigade got hit by this jammy spell shenanigans.
It's not jammy.
No, I know. It's like, it's like.
So I put two goblin shaman either side of his artillery brigade.
Which was cannons, two Hellblasters cannons.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then I rolled a five.
Yeah.
With one of them.
Yeah.
The first one. And then I rolled three dice.
Yep.
And got three hits.
Yep.
Three dice got three hits, three dice got three hits.
Three it's like, hits. It wiped out my artillery.
Well, it did leave us stand.
Yeah, yeah, but it did so much damage to me, like breakpoints wise,
yeah.
That it was like, because I've been streaming across the river, just trying to get my. Playing the scenario as far as I like to get the guys across. I'd been losing troops, and that swung it, so it meant that Barry ended up breaking me, you know, like on turn six.
Yeah, so it was like, I mean, the break's irrelevant, but it was 11 4 or something.
Yeah. So, yeah, but it's to say, like, so Sarah, Barry won the scenario. Because I realised, like, I could have bunkered down on the right, on the opposite of the other river, on the right hand side, using the woods and the marsh, and just camped out there.
I've never been able to get you out
of that's the thing,
woods.
It's like, that's to say, like, that was a problem with the scenarios. I could have forced across on the. I could have gone across on the right, and then just ran everything else away from you, and just. Stayed there on the right, and just because in this scenario there's a set amount of turns, and I know there's going to be an ending, and I know that I've got enough across the real water to score points wise, but as I say, like I'm saying, like you'd have to play this scenario quite a few times to look how you could break it. You know, is it like because I realised that was something I could have done. I chose not.
It's quite a lot of orders to get them there.
But yeah, yeah. I mean, that's enough. That's the thing.
The giant was there waiting for you to fail that order and go smash you in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we. Anyway.
I mean, he did take off your pistoliers and your.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And your like, eagle or whatever it's called.
Did a lovely giant manoeuvre of getting behind, failing an order, and rolling a six to like go
smash
crazy.
In the arse for 18 dice.
But never mind. I mean, so yeah. The tale of it is that Barry won by breaking my Empire army.
And breaking your winning streak
of
two.
Yes, my streak of two. So, there we go. That was the tale of the game, is that I got a lot across the water, but Barry could smash it enough to, you know, after the artillery went down a magical hole. Like, yeah, lame. Yeah, but never mind. Like, that's something Orc and Goblins can do, because they can throw wizards away.
Because I knew when I exposed my artillery that he was going to try and aim his artillery at me. So I put my little gobblins in front of them.
My blinkers.
In like a step formation. So there was nothing behind them for the guns to shoot through.
It's like hold your hands, boys. Like go in the staggered formation so this thing can't see. Oh.
So they were still blinkering.
It's totally legit, but it's like, oh.
Yeah. And it meant that when he shot, he only had the first stand, and there was nothing behind, so there was no bounce-throughs.
Yeah.
So it was just four dice, or six dice, or whatever it was, of the goblins who didn't die, and they stayed there confused, but that's their remembrance.
Yeah, yeah,
it was funny. Superb. Superb. Cheesemanship, I call it. Cheesemanship.
Yeah. So anyway, Barry won a game of Orcs. Now, this doesn't count for the Orc and Goblin Challenge.
Nowhere near.
But with
a substandard list as well.
Yeah, yeah. I had
five units that literally stood holding their plums the entire game.
Out of the two, I'd have said, like, I was quite happy with how the Empire list was built for it. But yeah, definitely, the Orc list is not optimal for the scenario. But
when Paul
go.
Was hiding in the marsh and I had like four units of cavalry and a giant just waiting for something to come out so I could smash
but
it.
That's the thing, is like you don't have to. Okay, so the good points about the scenario. So like, let's go on to that was tale of the game. So scenario play in general wargaming. Right.
All right. So we'll talk about this scenario.
Talk about this scenario.
Bit,
yeah. Okay. So the good things about this scenario was that I really liked the whole. I like using Empire, and I like the way that I was like tactically. Okay, I've got to get these guys across a bridge, across the water. And
you didn't bother with the bridge.
Well, but it can only take one unit. I mean, like I would have done, but it's like it's difficult. It's, you know, you can't set up to defend yourself, like, once you're across it. Basically, I enjoyed the whole ferrying troops across. That was great. That was really like, this is a lovely war game I'm playing right now, like, trying to ferry my troops across, where it's more like, it's not so much...
It's very dangerous. If you get trapped and you can't retreat into the water and you get hit, which happened only once, you're just gone.
Yeah, but it was like, it's almost like I'm playing against the scenery rather than really my opponent, because I'm, like, trying to do this. And it felt like... Because normally, like military ratios of attack and defence show that you need 3 times the attacking strength against the defender for attrition purposes. It doesn't really work in war games, because it's like, well, I'd have to bring 3 times the army.
That's not going to happen, is it?
They're not going to happen. But I like the victory points compensate it really nicely. I thought they were well worked out. The VPs.
If we'd have got to turn 8, you'd have won handsomely.
Oh, yeah, because like, I had units... Each unit scoring extra 200 points in a 2,000-point game is massive. I don't need that many across, like, to actually swing it big win to me. And, in fact, that could be almost a tactic of this, is that you just only send a bit across because that's enough for you to score to win.
But they've got to be there at turn 8.
But they've got to be there.
And it's not easy to kill them.
Yeah.
When they're in that dangerous marsh bit...
Yeah, yeah.
If you get charged, if you lose at all, you're dead, basically, because you can't get pushed back.
Yeah. So, I really like that. The thing that I felt was bad about it is that you could game it too much, in a sense. That, like, you could look at it and go, well, if I do that, and then I can stop moving anything. I basically run away from Barry for a couple of turns, because I know the game's going to finish on 8 turns, because that's what we rolled. And he won't be able to come get me, and I'll score that way. Like, I could basically play like, play uncharacter and be like, right, now just switch it back to like staggering my stuff away from you to win this scenario. But it's interesting food for thought, definitely. What do you think, Barry?
I thought that I made a massive mistake in not defending that wood. So I'm not saying I should have deployed my whole army at the wood, but I should have put a decent brigade in that wood.
Yeah, something to initiative charge out.
Yeah, and something that could stop you getting into the bloody wood. Because if and when you got into that wood, I was in real trouble. Yeah. I couldn't win the game. Mm-hmm. But I was quite happy with what I did around the hill, because the hill was my key defensive feature.
Yeah,
That's what I wanted.
I think in terms of scenery, it's a very fair setup. Like, 2 woods, symmetrical,
massive woods. The woods are just humongous.
And one hill, you know, at a good out of the deployment zone, away opposite the bridge. I mean, that is, in terms of, I'm looking at this thinking, could you take this scenario to an organised event? That would be quite easy to replicate as a setup. You know, like, as in, you know, everyone, okay, so this round, everyone's playing this scenario. It would be quite easy to replicate.
Yeah, the only hassle was getting the river sorted, but it's not that difficult.
Well, you cut
the river.
Cloth, and it worked.
It was a bit cobbled together homebrew, but
it would work. I mean, like, for a temporary thing, like, if you were to have this at an event, like, you'd have to be able to do this on 8 tables, wouldn't you? So then to have the cloth, that would work. That would quite nicely, like, it would, in a sense.
I think that you said, you know, that you could cheese it out.
Yeah.
Like, by just forcing everybody across on one area and just camping and that.
Yeah.
Well, the tactic against that is I can't allow you to do that.
Yeah.
So I need to put more of my force in that area.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Which I didn't do.
I mean, I really liked the build of the army then. Because, cavalry did not have a big role in this game. In this scenario.
No, even if you got them across, they were so exposed because there was nothing to support.
Because even if you had High Elf, Silverhelm, Command 10 led cavalry, they'd get across that bridge quite quickly, but they'd be completely surrounded by the enemy with nowhere to back off to. Like, it's in there. They'd get across, if they were defenders and they sally forth over the bridge and they're in the attacker's side, they've got to face the entire army unsupported.
Yeah.
You know, they will lose.
Yeah.
Like, sooner or later, they'll die. Yeah, you know, like, it's because, and it's like, in a sense, this scenario is effectively a siege game without castle walls. Yeah, you know, and it works.
You've just got one door.
Yeah,
yeah.
Think of it that way. It's a siege game with one sally port, and the walls are the river itself. yeah, it would. You'd need to play it a lot with different armies to see if ever, like, how would Bretonians handle this?
I think,
like,
Skaven might handle it quite easily. Yeah.
My
We've
God.
Got millions of them.
Oh my God! Imagine that. I try to. Oh yeah, that would be interesting.
Defending with them would be good.
Yeah, because something we should do with this is take these two lists, switch them over, and play opposite, and play, you know, the same game, but I use the Orcs, you use the Empire list.
Yep.
And equally, we should play this one where we choose the armies, like, what armies do we want to bring? But I think, it for fairness sake, we bring, like, one of us designs both army lists.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, we choose another two armies that we own and say, okay, I'll make the two army lists. And again, we roll off to see which one we use. Because, this siege, effectively, scenario would be great in an event if it was alongside a more open battle style one as well. Because there, you want more cavalry in the open battle, like, regular
game.
Yeah,
but you've only got one list, you can't have it.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what we're aiming for, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is we're aiming for, like, lists that are, like, generally quite different. Because, I say, we're at the moment, our meta is going towards that 2,000-point timed game, where, like, an Orc list would have a lot of Boar Riders in it.
Mm.
Well, they ain't got a place in this scenario, have they? Like, you don't need more than a couple of units of cavalry, at most, just to counter off the
bridge. They would have a place if you could get them into position.
Yeah.
You're Orcs.
Yeah.
You're not going to get the orders off to get them on the right side and then be able to do anything with them.
Yeah, exactly. Or, like a High Elf army, a small elite army, it needs more numbers in this one.
Yeah, I thought about playing at 1,000, but I thought you couldn't defend. You just wouldn't have anything to defend.
No, it wouldn't work at 1,000. Not on a 6x4.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, far too many open areas just to come straight across. Like a High Elf army, which is a small elite army, you know, would struggle with this because, like, it needs more infantry. Like, and that isn't what you would normally take in a High Elf list. You'd have, you know, you'd like your cavalry, you'd like...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, it would be... It's very interesting to think about, well, okay, so, like, it's a one-off game. Yeah, it's a laugh.
It's all right.
Yeah, like,
enjoyed it.
Yeah, of course it is. But, like, and then it's like, but, you know, how can we push that forward? And, like, and... Because at the moment, we're running in events that have three games in a day, so you want three quite different scenarios, don't you? Really?
Yeah.
You're like, one of them we've already got, which is the regular game. Another
pitch
one...
Pitch battle.
One of them could be this, which is, I'd say, almost the opposite of a pitched battle game, which has a very narrow... It's like a siege game. And then you need another one, which is somewhere in the middle, I suppose, or something objective-based.
You've got to... Yeah. Yeah. Like, the next one, the Battle of Nob Hill. I mean, that's the King of the Hill kind of
King
thing,
of
isn't
Hill.
It?
Yeah. Big hill in the middle. Defend it, you know?
Yeah, and you start there.
Yeah.
Defenders start on the hill.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that is quite different as well, that one.
I'm not sure how... We'll have to play it.
Hopefully
it's not dwarves defending the hill.
It's Bretonians and Orcs, actually, it says in the book.
So Orcs defending again. So
interestingly, they wrote a scenario for a list that they hadn't created. You know, like, at this time. But they do say that. They say, oops, word of warning, we didn't design the armies, finished. But anyway, never mind. But yeah...
So I'd be tempted to do this again, but I think... I'd be tempted to do Battle of Nob Hill next.
Well,
if we could get some Bretonian models.
Yes, borrow them from Phil.
Yeah.
Or use tokens, I suppose, if we have
to. No, no tokens anymore.
All right, we're done with tokens. Borrow Phil's army while we wait for our Bretonians to turn up. Yeah, exactly. And then there are... I mean, there's this one, the relief of Khazabutul, which turns the table around. Yeah, which is your cap, which is your cliffs on either side, and you play down the table.
And that's Dwarfs Orcs.
That's in this one. It's Dwarf Orcs, but that's like that's a different style again. Well, Grim on Sour, which is corner to corner, which is where you've got to burn buildings down.
Great.
Yeah, that's High Elves Dwarves.
Battle of the Beard.
I mean, there are some. Even though these scenarios are quite simple in their map and rules, they do change it up really nicely.
Yeah.
Like this one, for example, Wagon Train over Axepike Pass, where you've got wagons moving down a road that you've got to defend. So the attackers have got to come in and smash up the wagons.
Right.
There's like a moving objective game. Yeah, there's some...
And this is like the Moon of Endor, this one. Oh my God, are they all forests?
The Confederate of Sigmar is a three-way game, effectively. This would be a good one for a podcast to invite a third person on to play it.
Yeah,
if we can find,
and then attack them, yeah? Get Janus to defend.
Yeah, let's go for him. Smash
stab
him.
Stab him.
Yeah.
That Janus.
So, definitely, there's... I mean, it would take a lot of playing around, because there are so many armies in Warmaster, but we've got to think... basically, in Oldhammer, like Fantasy, Warhammer Fantasy, there were 6 scenarios out of the 8th edition rulebook that you would play.
Really?
And they only...
There were 6, were there? The 6 that you would play?
Well, there was 5, really. But like, no, I'm telling you... Like,
no, I'm saying, but do you think they bothered playtesting that one very much?
The Watchtower one? No. But because the rules for buildings are a bit silly. Anyway, because there was no limit on how many models you can have in a building.
Yeah.
So you could put, like... 100 unit in that building and be like, oh, they're zombies. They're like, good luck getting them to die.
It's like 5 at a time.
5 at a time. Yeah, like, anyway, so that didn't get played, the Watchtower one, but the other scenarios all did. And they all they did, though, was turn, was basically alternate different setups. That was all it was. Like, you might set up diagonally, you might set up, you know, like traditionally, you might have a narrower frontage but further forward. That's all they really did, the scenarios, were in War, and the 8th edition rulebook was just change how you set up. You don't need to do that in Warmaster, because things are quite manoeuvrable, and you just spend a turn reorganising your line how you want it. So those scenarios, like those type of scenarios, wouldn't work in Warmaster, because they wouldn't really be any different. But, like, a scenario that is a siege game, a scenario that is a central hill defence game, a scenario that turns the table round, or, like, burns buildings down, like... objective-based,
yeah,
they would make a very different... Yeah, and if we presented an event that had those three things, people have to really think a lot about what units they... what army list they bring, because it's got to play three very different scenarios against different opponents each time.
Yeah, be interesting. Maybe not every time, but it's something to maybe look at for the future.
Well, I mean, I know that...
I enjoy playing the scenario play more than I expected.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, Warmaster's a great game, and you play it in any format, it's going to be enjoyable. But it's like, you know... Basically, well, we can take this fluff scenario, but we'll metagame it, like, straight... I mean, like, to say, like, in that thing today, I was like, well, I could just camp out there and win, but
that was my problem, because I didn't...
Well, that's what I'm saying, like, what I'm saying, but, like, that's all, like, next time I will. And I'll be like, yeah,
well, next time you'll be attacking.
But, like, yeah, but you'll try and do it. And I won't let you. But, like, let's say, like, the Triwizard one, the guys in Saffron Walden, they stated that they will do a regular, like, style one, 3 pitch battle games, and then a different one each year. Like, every, yeah, so they're doing 2 a year, like we're doing 2 a year.
Yeah.
They did doubles last time.
That was good.
So maybe for their next one, as in they're playing a regular one in November, but their following one might be scenarios. And we could, like, do the R&D for them. Yeah.
Well, we will see.
Yeah,
we'll see. What time is it? We've got 46. So we'll talk a few minutes about scenario play in general wargaming and why that's good.
Yep.
We talked about this quite a while ago, and we talk about it quite regularly, is that games like War Machine or... did Fantasy just revert to pitch battle in the end?
Some events were that, but as I say, like, there were 6... As I said, of the 6 scenarios in the book, 5 were played, and as I say, all they changed was how you were set up. So they were just variations on a pitch battle.
And I don't know about your net epic, but the other game that I've played that's not net epic, called Armageddon, that's completely scenario-driven. There's like 5 criteria for an if you
but,
get.
I mean, Net Epic has a very robust game that you play. It's always 8 objectives that you score points off.
Right.
So it's always objective play.
Always objective.
Always.
Right,
that is a regular game, is objective play.
Okay. And that's the same for Armageddon. It's always objective based.
Yeah, it's always objective. It's the tournament scenario.
Or Malifaux, that's always objective based. Yeah. Or I don't know about Guild Ball, I guess that's slightly
different.
Well,
it's a sports game, isn't it?
So.
Same like Blood Bowl is.
So I think in order to kind of keep a game fresh and evolving, like having scenarios is important.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the one for scenario, I mean, War Machine is the best one, for example, for scenario play. Because when people learn playing War Machine and they like bring out a battle box and use that, that is incredibly different than tournament play, which is you've got these steamroller pack and they've done a really good job about developing these scenarios. And it's inspired. It matters so much that in a regular steamroller event where you have 2 lists, I've created 2 lists that are to play the different scenarios. You know, like, that's how important it is. Like, I can't play this list into that scenario because it will lose really badly. This list is designed to play into those 3 killbox ones, which this list can't play in. So unless we. But we don't. We wouldn't want to go down.
No, it's not 2 lists.
Yeah,
it's only one list.
We wouldn't want to go down that route. So that'd be really, that's how you would tackle it in Warmaster.
So, you'd have a scenario, potentially, but it would have to be not too far away from pitch battle to kind of mean that some builds can't even contest, can't even do it.
Yeah.
For example, Bretonnian. Bretonnian's the one that always sticks out. It's like, because they're going to have knights, they're going to have a lot of knights.
They're
going to be able to do something with those knights.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that would be if you were bringing a Bretonnian list to this kind of siege game, as in you know beforehand, because that's the thing, it's like, if you were going to do this, you have to publicise these scenarios out long ahead, and you have to be able to replicate all the tables to be exactly the same, like for it. It's only fair. If you were doing that for Bretonnians, they have to be able to, like, well, hang on a sec, I normally go for as many knights as I can, but knights aren't going to do very well in that game. I have to, how can I rebalance it? Probably have less knights and more expendable infantry, which I'm going to need for that game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll see. Right, what else we got to talk about? Is that it for today? It's quite a short one today.
Are we going to plug the next episode?
Oh, we can do. So, we've talked about the fact that we're going to go to try and have a weekly schedule, so we'll try and release probably on a Friday. I'll try and get it out. Mm-hmm. We will still record on the days we record,
but
try and be a bit more routine about when it comes out so you can kind of know when to expect one.
Okay.
And the next episode, we're going to be doing a creative interlude. Because our friend Sherwin, the guy from KR, who's no longer from KR, he's got a job at a game company.
Well, we can say that. That's not a fact. He works for Steamforge now.
He works for Steamforge. And he's the fluff bunny for Steamforge.
He wrote the fluff for Guild Ball, and he's the full-time writer for Steamforge.
So he's going to be talking about how you get into that kind of industry. What you have to do. What he did to get there.
Yeah.
About what he's doing now at Steamforge.
We'll be asking his... I mean, he's not a guy who plays Warmaster.
He did.
He looked at it. But it'd be interesting hearing his two cents about the subject. So it's not going to be an episode that has nothing to do with Warmaster.
Yeah, no, we'll still talk about our Warmaster stuff, and we'll ask him some questions from an outsider's perspective.
Yeah.
Like some... He's a pretty hardcore wargamer.
I mean, he wins all the time. So. Yeah, like at the last War Machine event.
So maybe that's why he doesn't like it. He doesn't feel he can win.
Yeah, at the last War Machine event, he won all the prizes, the painting, the sportsmanship and the event,
everything.
And just kind of dropped the
doesn't
mic.
Doesn't make you
sick. Yeah, it's like he's that guy that just wins. Yeah,
just wins. All we do is win.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to talk about. We're also going to, he's a bit of a painter, so we'll talk about his...
He's a lovely painter, he's fantastic.
His basic technique for painting.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
And then he tips and... Yeah. My basic technique is to get rid to do it.
It should be good because it would just be like to coax the... He's been on podcasts before, naturally, because he's being the fluff writer for Guild Ball. He's been on quite a few, invited on to do such a thing. But it'll be interesting to, like... We know him really well. And it'll be to coach him to, like, just chat on the mic, coach him with enough tea.
And he doesn't drink tea.
Oh, whatever.
Doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Doesn't drink, doesn't smoke. What does he do? Right, so, that'll be it. So it'll be an interesting one, next one. It'll be probably released on Friday week.
Yes, and when we come back to doing an army review, it'll be me for Skaven.
Hooray!
Because
now you've got a win.
I now have a win, a legitimate win. I feel like I can talk about them. Oh, my God.
A real win.
Yeah, but, yeah.
By abusing the clock.
By sitting there going, you can't do it.
I'll do it, got another time. Yep. Need more time. Can I play a Joker and, like, do double damage that turn? Because I've got, like, some cheese. Rat poison. Warfarin.
Oh, no. Is that rat poison?
Warfarin, yeah.
Is it rat poison?
Yeah, that blood thinner.
Yeah.
So that when they squeeze through the tiny holes it kind of... They get internal bleeding and die.
That's so cruel. It's like, oh my God.
Turns them all into... What's it? Haemophilia, is it? The one where you don't stop bleeding?
That's horrible. I didn't know that's what it did.
Yeah, warfarin.
Well, I didn't know that's why it was used as rat poison. Yeah. I thought it would just kill them outright.
No, they hurt themselves going through little holes and bleed out internally.
Oh, God.
Those poor rats.
That's so cruel. Well, can't you just have a little guillotine at the rat hole?
I just stand there like an axe man, just cutting them as they come out.
Yeah.
Poor rat. Well, anyway, so if you want to get in touch with us, you can do the Facebook page, as always, or the warmaster.podcast@googlemail.com.
Yes, and we plan to record this next one on Tuesday night.
No game, probably. Because kids are off now. Yeah, this is the last day.
It'll be a chat, and then it will be... so we will record the episode and release it to Barry's schedule.
So that was the War Must Focus episode 26, Battle of Little Bash,
yep,
with Paul and Barry.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Too much information, well I said you got for nothing. Come out to the back, I said, tell me, let's go for something. Guess I better sell you now, guess I'll